Welcome to Creative Mind Soul Sessions with Deborah Burnt Maldonado and Dr. Rob Maldonado, founders of Creative Mind. Explore personal growth with us through Jungian psychology, Eastern spirituality, and social neuroscience in a deep but practical way. Let's begin. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Soul Sessions with Creative Mind. And we have a wonderful new series.
We're starting a new series.
And what is the series?
It's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's interesting. It's, did your parents really screw you up? We know in the culture there's a prevalent idea that our parents messed us up somehow, and therefore we need therapy. You know, there's something wrong with us because of the way we were raised. And it's so prevalent that a lot of people haven't even thought about it, or they never question it, right? Mm. It's just kind of assumed, I guess, from Freud, right? If it's not one thing, it's your mother. Mm-hmm. And this kind of idea pervades the culture that, yeah, our parents screwed us up. We know a lot of us have experienced our parents divorcing, different parenting styles that go back to the 70s, 80s, 90s. So
maybe earlier than that.
Yeah, maybe earlier than that. So we wanted to do a series looking at the evidence. Mm.
For and against.
For and against. Is there good evidence that our parents screwed us up?
Can we blame them, or do we have to take responsibility?
That's right.
And so we're going to talk about biology, DNA, genetics. We're going to talk about nurture, nature, the argument. We're going to talk about parenting styles in an episode. And then also we're going to talk about the spiritual dynamics of a family, which is archetypal, which is going to be the last episode of the series. But today we're going to talk about DNA. And the topic is, can you blame your genes for your problems? Can you change your DNA? And are you stuck with what you have? And how much impact DNA has on your life and decisions? And, well, we all know it has to do with our physical appearance. A lot of people, the blue eye, brown eye, maybe intelligence. But we're going to dig into that today. So let's start with, what is DNA inheritance? Like, when you say inheritance, where are we getting? Let's go back to the beginning of time.
Yeah, I mean, we're all related in that sense. And all life on the planet is related. Mm-hmm. We're actually all relatives, including starfish in the ocean and humans and everything that is alive is related, because it all goes back to these one-celled organisms that originate on the planet. But what we're talking about is the inheritance from our parents, the genes that are passed down to us.
And so half your mother, half your father, your biological parents.
Yeah, 23 pairs, half of them come from your mother, half from your father. And the X and Y, right? The Y comes from your dad, the X comes from your mom, and that determines your sex as well. Mm. But
so we do have to blame our parents if we don't like the sex we were born into. Well, in a way, kind of like they're. I mean, not really. I mean, they don't have control over that.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the factors, right? That if you say, well, I blame them for my height, for example. If you're not happy with your height, I always wanted to be at least 6 feet tall, but I'm 5'10", which is the average. It falls right on the middle.
I always wanted to be shorter.
You wanted to be shorter,
right? I'm the shortest person in my family. I'm 5'8". You met my family. They're like Amazon. Like, my brother's 6'4". My father was 6'2". Very tall. My mom was even 5'8" at one point. Now she's the shortest person because she's getting older. But yeah, I always wanted to be more petite and tinier. And I was just the tallest.
So can you do anything about that? That's one of the questions we're going to be discussing. And also, can you blame your mom for choosing your dad who was tall?
Mom, what were you thinking? Yeah, so inheritance. So I think one of the most surprising concepts that you taught me is that when we think of DNA, a lot of people think it's our physical biology. So what eye color, hair color, body size, body shape, tendencies, like certain tendencies, intelligence. But I didn't realize that personality was actually coded in the DNA, which I found that it maybe a lot of people knew that already, but I found that very surprising. We think our personality is something we create, you know, I decide to be a certain way.
Yeah, we can think of it this way. There, almost everything has a genetic component. Mm. So what that means is it's not 100% DNA. In other words, your personality is not determined 100% by your DNA, but there's an important element that plays into your personality development that comes from your genes.
And another thing that you mentioned, which I thought was really interesting, is your spiritual interest or spiritual curiosity is genetic. It can be part genetic.
In part, yes.
Because we think, well, religion, we're raised in a religion, we're taught how to experience God. But that alone is not the only element, because there's people that have not brought up with no religion but are very mystical, and they don't know why, but out of all their siblings, for some reason, they're the one that, you know, is picking up the tarot cards or going to, you know, reading books on spirituality or going to the Buddha Center or taking yoga, where everyone else in the family is just agnostic or atheist. And it's just like, where did she come from? I remember one of my cousins, when he was really little, all the people in the family, they weren't very religious. We were all Catholic, but they didn't even go to church. And their one son was like reading like Jesus books. And they were like, we don't know where he got this from because we don't talk about it. So that would be a genetic, impact.
Maybe? Yeah. I mean, I think of it as like a seed. Mm. There's a seed of that spirituality in the genes, in your genetic inheritance. And then if the environment, which we'll be talking about as well, creates the conditions for the growth of that seed, then you have that expression.
So let's talk about just the inheritance. What do we know about inheritance?
Yeah. So we know that genetics, and when you take genetics and when you study the, it's called behavioral genetics now, which is the looking at genes and how they influence mental health, all kind of human behavior. When you study that, you start to think, oh my God, everything can be explained through the genes because they're so powerful. We'll talk, let's say the environment we know plays an important role. You can't really understand genes unless you understand the environment as well, the interaction with the environment.
So it's part of the story.
Part of the story, but it's a very important part. And especially now, because recently we discovered that epigenetics is also playing a big part in the way we act.
Well, let's talk about what is epigenetics for people who have never heard the term.
So everyone knows about the chromosomes and the genes that you get from your parents. Now, what the genes are doing, what that genetic code is doing, it's building your body. It's like a manual, the blueprints for how our...
Like every cell has that, when it has all the information for every part of the body, and then it becomes specialized and then creates, this cell, I'm going to be a liver, so I have the code and the map to create.
Yeah, it's encoded in there. Yeah. That's why people can clone now, can clone animals and human beings, because the code contains all the information, the color of your eyes, the texture of your hair, your height, your intelligence, your personality, your propensity for diseases, all encoded in the genes given to you by your parents. Mm. Now, epigenetics, what it does, as I go through my life then, and I'm experiencing great things, education, jobs, opportunities, but also traumas, as I go through heartbreaks, and maybe I experience a war.
You had a heartbreak?
Or not me, but you know, other people. I've heard people experience those things. Or you go through a war, right?
Like we're having now.
Yes. But actually participate in it or get caught up in it.
Yeah.
The epigenetic code, and epi simply means above, so it codes on top of your genetics the epigenetic code, those experiences.
So people who experienced, were in the like camps at the Holocaust, people who, well, really struggled. I know a lot of us have parents or grandparents that went through the Depression. And so the Great Depression, it was really a dark time. There was like a lot of Wall Street fallouts and job losses. So these things that impact natural disasters that happen. So those type of events will shape that person. So it might not be you that experienced the event, but your family experienced it or someone down the line and created, activated something to cope with it, or to like it activates something in the genetic code.
Yeah, and that something is the gene. It's in other words, it turns genes on and off.
And so, what do the genes do? What would that would be their purpose?
Yeah,
to turn
so most of our genes are actually dormant. They're they used to think that they're not doing anything. They're just kind of left over from
kind of like my closet from some evolution. Of my genes are left in dormant.
Yes. But recently they found that no, these genes are actually capable of waking up at certain points. So the epigenetic code operates at that level. It wakes up certain genes. It turns them on. And so they're able to kind of help you or hurt you depending on which ones get turned on and off.
Or shutting off too at the same time.
Yes.
Wouldn't it shut off certain genes?
Yeah, exactly. Depending on your environmental experiences. Mm. So for example, if your great grandparents went through a civil war and you know, it gets encoded in the epigenetic code, meaning you're going to inherit that epigenetic code as well, then you experience some kind of violence in your society or your personal experience. It might turn on genes that helped your grandparents survive those experiences.
So it helps you. It's kind of like a playbook, just in case this happens.
Yes.
Because you're related, it might be more possible for you to experience a similar situation. Maybe that's how the nature works.
It makes sense, right? Yeah. That their experiences help you now cope with similar situations. Mm-hmm. So it's passed down. And people didn't know about this until recently. They knew about the genetic code, right, which builds the body and the brain, but they didn't know about this kind of understanding of the epigenetics, which gives you a heads up about the environment and how to cope with it. Now, on the other hand, if your parents or great-grandparents went through a famine and they experienced severe hunger and lack, that might be coded in the epigenetic code as well, and you inherit then a propensity to hoard food or something like that. That
doesn't make any logical sense.
Yeah, you won't be able to find something in your personal experience, but it's coming from this epigenetic code.
Are you looking for a satisfying career as a life coach? If you are seeking a deeper path of training and growth, Creative Mind University offers an ICF-accredited life coach training program that goes beyond surface positive thinking and into a powerful process of real transformation. You can start your new career as a certified life coach trained in a unique methodology based on Jungian theory, Eastern spirituality, and social neuroscience. Get the tools to become your true self, change your life, and the lives of others. Visit creativemindlife.com, click on apply, and speak with one of our team members today to discuss your future and possibilities of becoming a certified life coach. That's creativemindlife.com. So I have a couple of questions. Number one is, we inherit these genetic epigenetic codes. They don't necessarily have to turn on, but we have the potential for it to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And then can we create new epigenetic turn on and off codes during our lifetime? And does it affect us, or it only affects our offspring or our, you know, future generations?
Can
so, like, in childhood, the epigenetics like say you're unique, you never had, there's no history of any ancestor who experienced famine, but in your childhood there was like a war or something and you were starving as a kid, it would activate or turn off epigenetics. But would that affect that person in that lifetime, or would it affect her or his children and grandchildren? So yeah. How fast, I guess my question is, how fast can you turn it around? Can you use them, to alter your experience? Do we know?
Well, you can't consciously do it. In other words, you can't say, I'm going to code some epigenetic experience for future generations. Yes. But your mind body will do its work, right?
Yes, if but it's I mean, something would you feel an effect of that? In your, like if you had an epigenetic code turn on or off, you would experience that, even though you might not know that what that is, but you would experience some kind of difference or...
Yes.
And it would be showed up genetically, like if you went under...
Not genetically, but epigenetically.
Epigenetically. Yeah. So can you read that through like a DNA test or...
Yeah. They see these proteins that are markers on the genes, and that they turn these genes on and off. Mm.
So we can experience them directly in our lifetime. So
absolutely, and then our own personal experience may get coded in the epigenetic code, mm. and then passed on to our children and grandchildren. Mm.
So when we talk about our childhood experience, is it more prevalent to have the epigenetics turn on and off during childhood or throughout your life? Or is there a certain time? Like we know in psychology, it's under 8 or 9. Most of our conditioning was created and kind of baked in. But what about epigenetics? Does that match that psychology?
I don't know. Mm. A lot of it is fairly new, and so all the smaller, subtle details haven't been worked out yet. Mm. But it's been kind of verified, right? Mm. We never say proven in real science. It supports the theory of this epigenetic code playing an important role in human evolution.
And so when we talk about twin studies, is this how they determine the epigenetics, or what is that research?
Well, let's talk about genetics in general, okay. Because the epigenetics is an important piece, but let's look at intelligence, for example, as an example, because we know all these other factors play in personality, sociability, meaning
introvert, extrovert,
all that, comes from.
So it's not your choice to be an introvert; it's a genetic.
Yes.
Yeah.
So intelligence, for example, we look at two things. First of all, the distribution, and there's an incredible idea in statistics. It's called the normal distribution, and the normal distribution, like if you take any human characteristic. Let's say height, it will fall in this bell curve. Mm-hmm. It's like a little hill or the shape of a bell, mm-hmm. meaning there's like a peak where mm-hmm. Where the bell kind of hangs on to the top, and then it flares out at the bottom mm-hmm. with the two ends. Now, what that means is that most people fall in the middle. That's why it bulges in the center. It's like a hill, right? That about... Over 60% of the people fall within that middle range, meaning the average. Mm-hmm. But then you have people that are very tall. Mm-hmm. So there's a little tail towards the end on the right-hand side, and people that are very short, mm-hmm. which is the small tail in the beginning or the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. So intelligence is very similar. Mm-hmm. If you test enough people, you will get that bell curve. Where most people will be in the middle, average intelligence, with some people genius level and other people mentally retarded, right, mm-hmm. on the other extreme. That trait we know is inherited, meaning you're mm-hmm. going to inherit about half and half from your parents, mm-hmm. half of your... let's say your intelligence is an average of your parents' mm-hmm. intelligence. And so that where your particular score falls, that is called the variable. Mm. It varies. So if you test all your siblings,
I'm the smartest.
Not everyone will have the same score, though. Mm-hmm. There'll be variability, right? Mm-hmm. That variance is what we're interested in, because it tells us then, if you guys have the same parents, meaning mm-hmm. both the, well, you share your parents' genes, essentially, mm-hmm. 50-50 from your mother and father, the variance has to do with the environment. Mm.
Okay.
Right? Something you learned.
Or birth order, too, could be.
That's the environment, essentially. Yeah, yeah. Right? Because it plays into how you were treated, what kind of attention you got.
Only child, and then you have, like, my father was 18 years younger than his sister, so I can imagine they both had very different childhoods, and the yes. parent being older versus younger.
Yes.
I mean, my sister's the youngest, and so she basically got away with a lot more than we did. You know, I think we always hear that in families. So there's just like a different level of freedom or tolerance. And so the
environment now is an important factor in your level of intelligence. Mm. And this goes for personality, for spirituality, all these other traits, right? So you inherit this propensity for a certain level of intelligence, but then the environment plays the role of bringing it forth, expressing mm-hmm. it, right? And either nourishing it and cultivating it or suppressing it. Mm-hmm. So that determines where your IQ score is, mm-hmm. right? Okay. That variance. The question then is, what is environment and what is
genetic?
What is inherited and what is the environmental role? That's the nature-nurture debate that's mm. been going on in psychology for a long time. So one of the ways we study that is twin studies. Mm-hmm. If you have identical twins and they're separated at birth and they're raised in different environments, then you test them as adults, you know, and to see what is the variance between, or the difference between their IQs. Mm-hmm. Then you can tease out what impact the environment had. Mm. Because they genetically, they're identical, mm-hmm. but their environments were different. So you get a sense of what is the environment doing.
And there's a lot of studies where twins were separated either through marriage or splitting. You know, you take one child, I'll take the other. But the one, there was one where they're two brothers and they didn't know there was a twin. They were both adopted out, and which is kind of common, actually. There was a lot of, I guess at a certain time, there was not a lot of money. So people who had twins, that would have been a big burden on a family. So they would give the babies up. And they would split the twins instead of keeping them together. And then they would look at them later on when they found reconnected. And there was one famous story where the men chose their wife, the same name of the wife. They chose the same, without even meeting, without even talking, they chose the same type of career. They yeah. liked the same things. And then you had said that also they got married twice. And then the second wife had the same name, both of them. So it's amazing how much just genetics alone can drive our decisions, which is mind-blowing.
Yes. Genetics are very powerful, but the environment is powerful as well. Mm. So when we put it all together and we look at, okay, so we inherit these genes and you know, from our parents, and which tell us how we're going to look, how tall we're going to be, how intelligent we're going to be, our personality in a sense. And then we consider the environment, like what role is the environment having? With the school I go to, the teachers I get, the type of education, mm-hmm. The type of neighborhood that I live mm-hmm. in.
And what do the kids do? Are they interested in reading, or are they interested in doing drugs, right? They, yeah. they or doing other things.
Culture, language, yeah. Television, mm. what's going on in the culture.
In the family, right?
In the family as well. So all those things play a big role in kind of shaping our intelligence, our behavior, our health, the partners that we choose, all these different things. So when we boil it down to, okay, what percentage of our behavior is controlled or influenced, dictated by genes, and what percentage is dictated by environment, it falls to about 40% of the variance is genetic and 40% environmental.
So the 20% is chance?
Then 20%, the 20% that's left over is complete
up for grabs.
Yes.
Wow. So we have a 20% chance to break our patterns from our family?
Yes.
But that's a big percentage. I mean, we think it's not small. It's not like 1%. 20% is...
That's right. It is part of the universe because the uncertainty principle is baked into everything.
It's the creative mind.
It's the creative element. We know genes, for example, go through mutations randomly. Mm-hmm. They go through these random mutations. So there's always that element of chance playing into our inheritance and the environment as well. But that 20% of variance, of chance variance, saves our ass because that means we're not stuck. Mm. Whatever we inherited from our parents genetically and whatever our environment was, we're not stuck to that. We can choose within that 20% to essentially say, what are we going to make out of these experiences?
So a lot of, you know, I've seen people floated around this idea of looking at your DNA and all that. Is that something? I mean, we have like Ancestry, 24andMe. You can learn a lot about yourself. We did it, and I'm 30% Irish. I was shocked. I was like, wow, I didn't have that much Irish in me. But it was. It's really interesting. There's this sort of like heaviness to that. There's a science behind. You know, like it's solid. But I love this idea of beyond even just our experience in life, which a lot of us who do personal development, we're always talking about our early life experiences or traumas or events that happened in our life that shaped us. But that 20%, can genetics help a person or dictate how open a person is to change?
Yeah.
So someone who has more like a warrior, disruptive kind of gene, like that kind of taking chances, risk, versus someone who tends to play it safe. That would be genetic, but also environment.
Right, because that's part of personality.
Ah.
So one of the big five kind of measures of personality is openness.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're open, it means you're more creative, more social.
So the big five is really a combination of genes and environment.
Yes.
Your personality.
That's right. It would fall... kind of on in this pattern that 40% of your personality comes from your genes and about 40% comes from your environment, your experiences, your education. But then that 20% chance is what creates that diversity of personalities, right?
That's why the siblings are different.
That's right. And you see people that go through very similar experiences and come out completely different because that 20% wiggle room allows us to make decisions for ourselves.
So some people could have a genetic disposition and even the environment, grow up in a very positive household and their genes are about willingness to be open and all that, but they could still have a 20% chance of being scared, you know, like not act upon that.
Yes, that's it.
So, or the opposite, where they're genetically predisposed to be more conservative, more closed down, maybe shut out. But that 20% is like, I'm breaking free. So my question to you now is, how can we unlock that 20%? How can we use that 20% to break free. I mean, we can't get rid of our genetics. I mean, we're not going to magically change our color of our eyes, or the early life experience. But we could change our attitude toward it. We can change how we relate to now today. How do we do that?
Yeah. So if you think about how our minds work, as human beings, we're able to think forward, like to run the movie forward. And we think about what would the consequences of this behavior be? Mm-hmm. And we kind of imagine different scenarios and we think, okay, I don't want to do that because it's too risky, or yes, I'm going to take this chance because I think it's going to work out. And it's all done mentally. Mm. So we can think in terms of creating our own conditions. Mm. If the environment is 40% of potential in us.
So we're really dealing with 60%, and exactly. Really stuck, the genetic is...
Not even there, because...
Is it epigenetics?
Because of epigenetics, but also neuroplasticity.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that...
So talk about that.
We're able to mold and reshape our physical brain, as well as our body. I mean, you see people that go to the gym and transform themselves completely, right? Or lose weight, or become marathon runners, mm-hmm. and just they do
go beyond the odds.
Yeah, so. Through their mind. And yeah, we always hear of these people that beat the odds. Mm-hmm. It's because of that 20%. That's the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. That there's a chance to change the patterns. But then where does it stop? Because like you say, there's more than 20%, because the environment that they're creating now, going to the gym instead of going to McDonald's.
So if you think about hanging out with people that go to the bar and eat fried foods and they don't exercise and that's part of your lifestyle, you're more likely to stay in that unhealthy lifestyle. But then you start hanging out with people at the yoga center and the gym, and you have friends and that talk about health, and or you're around that, it's a different scenario.
Absolutely.
You have a different experience.
You're creating the conditions for your own growth. In other words, you're creating your own environment.
You know, I was thinking this earlier, the concept of money, I think over the past 15 years, my concept of money has completely changed. Mm-hmm. And that is really being in an environment of people that are entrepreneurial, that are thinking about money differently than someone who punches a time card. So there's something there too about epigenetics turning on and off, like that 20% chance that you aren't locked into the fate of your past or even your culture, your family of, you know, you grow up in a poor family, you're meant to be poor, working class forever. Or you grow up even in a rich family, you could lose everything, you know, and blow it, the money. But this idea that you can actually create and change something so intangible, like how do you move your mind to that? I thought that was, just thinking about that today, how different, how I think about what I spend my money on, what we think is valuable, what we don't think is valuable, and where does money come from and what's possible. So even just money and so think about the body with health, what's possible. Like someone tells you, you have, my dad was diagnosed with leukemia. He went through chemo. The first time it didn't work. The second time he said, I only have a 20% chance, which is interesting, 20%. And I said, well, they didn't tell you zero. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, that's a good point. I said, you're going to be one of those 20%. Just hold your mind. And he was in an environment of someone who can hold that vision for him. And I promise you, his mind was impacted by, instead of having everyone tell him, it's terrible, terrible, to have someone say, it's possible. And my mom was there and we were all like rooting for him. I think that also creates health, don't you think, in recovery? So when we think about our physical bodies too, money, our physical bodies, relationships, what's possible for us? What kind of relationships can we have?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think about early experiences, the way they play out is that our mind and our brain, they work with the principle of expectation. So if you have an enriched environment early on, meaning there's a lot of books, there's a lot of puzzles, a lot of activities that teach you that you're learning new novel things continuously. Your brain says, the rest of my life, I have to prepare for this continual growth.
Mm. So you're building the road, the highways?
It anticipates, right? It is expecting to grow already. Mm. So you're approaching life already from being a child with this growth mindset, this mentality of growth, the possibility of moving forward.
And fascination, creativity,
curiosity.
Imagination.
Yes. The ability to learn how to learn.
Well, some people, they take things at face value. They're very pragmatic, and they've learned maybe that because through their family, that show me before I believe it. And then there's other people that have that natural creative tendency in their mind to just imagine and have fantasies and all those things. So I think that comes from part genetics, but also that 20% chance.
Yes. And then, so like we were saying, it's more than 20%, because once you take that opportunity and change your mindset, and you, instead of saying, my life was pretty rough, or my teachers told me I would never learn, or that they told me I have ADHD or a learning disability. And if you believe that, right, if you say, what's the use of me trying if my genes and my environment have set me up for failure and I never try, then that becomes your stuckness, essentially. That's as far as you go. But because of that 20% openness, if you say, I choose not to believe a prediction that doesn't empower me, it doesn't give me any opportunity for growth, for advancement, I just refuse to believe it. Mm. I'm going to make my own opportunities.
So you believe in your dream versus what the current circumstances are showing you.
That's right. And we know that principle operates in psychology and coaching, in philosophy, that whatever you expect comes about.
Yes. And if your mind resonates with people who you end up resonating with your belief system. Yeah. So if you believe in lack, you'll tend to feel more comfortable around lack. But if you surround yourself with people who have abundant thinking and possibilities, that will shift. So would you say that the best way, if you wanted to unlock your potential, change your environment? Would that be the first step? One of the first steps, or no?
I would say change your mind.
Well, and your environment as well, at the same time, if you are working towards something, a vision, and you're holding your mind in that possibility, wouldn't it be, it's helpful to have a nurturing environment for yourself, be around people who are thinking like you, who can basically help you, lift you up, and in a community that thinks like you, thinks in possibility?
Yes, it helps because it reinforces then those thoughts of possibility. Whereas if you have a possibility, let's say you have a vision, but you're surrounded by people that always boo-hoo it and then don't encourage you or don't support you, then the likelihood of you succeeding is very low because the environment is not supporting your vision.
Yeah, I mean, you can work a lot on your mind, but if everyone around you is telling you, what are you doing? Why are you doing your own business? Go back, get a job, be a real person. Don't go for your dreams. You know what a chance for you to make it is, one in a million. You know, if you're around that noise after a while, it's like you can fight it for so long, but the body and the mind works much better in an environment that is saying it's possible. We see this a lot with people. They'll go to an event when we used to do live events or do our training, and then they'll go back into the world and they kind of, those who check out of the community, they don't check in, they kind of go off and they're kind of lost. And it's like they come back and it's like they see the power of being in the conversation of that possibility versus being with the ordinary people that don't have big dreams. And we really, the dream stealers, as I call them, because everyone really, we're conditioned to be mediocre. We're conditioned for survival. We're not conditioned to do the impossible. And that's why so little people actually live that full, meaningful life, because we're so impacted by that environment. But we have, first of all, make a decision to change, to change our life, have that vision in our mind of what we want to create, and then you know work with our mind, but also find someone. It's like a fertile ground, like a beautiful flower that you want to plant. You don't want to plant it in a dry bed. You want to plant it where there's water and where there's rain and there's, you know, nutrients, and so it can grow. So that's also very important. But you'll find, wouldn't you say that if you're in an environment that's negative, it's also reflecting your mind, and you have to kind of come to terms with that part of that? That environment that's pulling you down, or like a marriage or friendships. And
yeah, you almost get into that chicken and egg situation with the genes and the environment, because they don't exist separately. Mm-hmm. You always see genes being expressed in an environment, mm-hmm. and the environment then prompt certain genes to wake up and to be activated. Mm-hmm. So it's never isolated. You can't think of the environment and
just
the
as
genes
the only thing.
Separate.
Well, you can't like go in and change
your genes. It's an interaction.
Yeah.
It's an interaction. That's what we're talking about. Mm. The interaction between our genes and the environment.
But since you can't really go in, open up your cells and change your DNA, the environment is...
Not yet.
Watch out. But the environment is really the first, like it would be something to, first, just a first step for people is, am I in an environment that is cultivating, helping me cultivate my dreams?
That's part of it, yes. But the
mind... Not the only thing.
No, yeah. I would say the mind, because thoughts... they don't cost anything. In other words, if I'm in lack and in poverty in a poor neighborhood, it doesn't cost me anything to imagine and to have a vision. Mm-hmm. I can do it, you know, just spontaneously. So already I'm starting to shift my own perception.
Yes.
By shifting my mind. So that's the beginning of it. Then I can look for...
You'll be drawn to a sort of different environment, right?
Yes.
You'll be like, I feel like I need new friends, or I'm more inspired by different people. And environment also is like what you watch on television, what kind of movies you watch, what books you read, where the senses, what are they pulling in, food you eat. All that is environment that you can change. Eating healthy food is, even if you don't, not doing it to lose weight, is like honoring the vessel of your soul to keep it...
Yeah.
Keep it alive as long as you can and healthy and fit.
Yeah. And we know it's not easy. Some people, because let's say their IQ falls, let's say, or their genes might be on the lower end of the scale as far as intelligence, and then they have an impoverished environment, their trajectory towards success is going to be a lot more difficult than somebody who's on the other side, right? They got good genes and their environment is supportive. Their track is a lot easier. But it's always possible because of that 20% chance opportunity. Mm. Those are opportunities. In other words, there's things that are going to happen to us that fall outside of those parameters.
Yeah.
And then it's up to us to take advantage of them, to say, what's possible for me? What can I do with these opportunities? And that's how people work their way out of poverty, out of lack, out of limitation. Mm-hmm. And IQs actually increase. People can actually increase their intelligence by taking action.
And so the desire to change is the first, and then the using your mind to figure out how to work with your mind, how to understand yourself, especially unconscious, as Jung talks about the shadow, facing your shadow, and knowing that you're not the personality or genetic biological component, that there's another self that's true and unlimited, and seeing yourself beyond that container that we're experiencing in the world.
So looking at all the evidence here, as far as genes and environment, can we blame our parents?
No. Well, because is it the parent? It's not our parents' DNA. It's like DNA from generation after generation after generation after generation. And they didn't consciously say, ooh, I'm going to make her eyes blue, and I'm going to make him smarter, and I'm going to make her have, some kind of learning disability. The parents really, and a lot of moms, I think, do blame when their kids have it. You worked a lot with learning disabilities when you were doing child psychology, as a child psychologist. The parents often blame themselves in a way, didn't they?
Well, not only the parents blaming themselves, there was actually a theory called the refrigerator mother.
Oh, yeah.
Which blamed the mother for autism. And this was up until the 80s. Mm. In the mid-80s, it was still going on. People thought the child is autistic because the mother is cold. Mm. That's where the term came from, the refrigerator mother. And, of course, we found out later that's not true. Yeah. That's not what is happening. There are strong genetic components to autism. And then environmental factors as well.
And also a lot of the treatment, even autism, people think that's so, it's genetic and it's, a life sentence. But there are a lot of behavioral processes that help the child really change and adapt and speak and find a way to function at a higher level. They don't just give up on them.
Yeah, we know social environment is very powerful. Mm-hmm. Again, because if you think about the numbers, it's equal to the genes. Mm. So the environment is important as well as the genes. Mm. So if there's a genetic component, you can offset it with enriched environments, environments that support the growth and development of their mind and brain.
And we cannot change our eye color or hair color, but we can change the body in ways to be healthier. And everyone's different with their genetic, what foods they based on their his ancestry. A lot of times certain ancestry backgrounds have a tendency for certain types of food. Yeah. For me, Irish, like the wine and the beer and the potatoes. I love potatoes. Where you don't, that wasn't part of your culture. So we have this kind of, and then we can digest and process different foods differently.
Yes. And some people have asked us about, can you change your genetic code? Mm-hmm. Because there are programs out there that talk about changing your genetic code
and to make money
and changing, rewiring your brain, those kind of things. And it's yes and no. Because technically they're not wrong. You can change the wiring in your brain, meaning the physical structure of your brain can actually change through meditation, through exercise, through puzzle solving. All learning is essentially a changing of the brain.
So your brain has changed from this episode. Just listening to new information, your brain is changed. It's constantly changing.
Rewiring. Yeah. Yes. The genes, it's a little bit more iffy, but yeah, I guess you could say, well, if you experience something profound, like walking through fire or going on a beautiful trip, an adventurous trip, it might activate certain epigenetic codes or suppress others, like anxiety or something like that. But the science is not really there to be able to control it. If people are saying, we're going to rewire your brain to think.
Be more confident.
Be more confident or be more, be richer or make more money or something like that. I think that's a little hypey. It's getting into the realm of more sales.
Pseudoscience.
Definitely not scientific because the science is not really there for that kind of control.
We don't, so it happens that we do have this adjustment, but we can't control what turns on. Like you were saying one time, one more kind of idea of this is that there's the same genetic code for the lips as or the eyes. There was some kind of, they were trying to make an adjustment to the DNA, like kind of doing tests, and you were like, it's the same. There's like a, Remember you told me about that?
Oh, that was so long ago.
You don't remember?
I don't remember.
But you were that. Like, it was a psychological experience that was changed or preconditioned. And then it also, that gene affects the lips, like the sealing of our, you know, our opening into our mouth and our eyes. Yeah, so there's like one gene can work on a lot of different parts psychologically and physically. And so if you're playing around with genes, like, oh, I'm going to turn this on and turn this off, you're kind of messing with nature in a way.
Yeah, it's very interactive. Like, there's not one gene for a certain thing. It's usually 100 or two.
Yeah.
So genes that play into that particular behavior. And so you can't really say, we're going to change that gene and you're going to miraculously be changed.
So what we want to do is say, you have to work with your mind. There is a there's possibility you're not locked into the past environment, past biology. There's a 20% chance, but also by working with your mind, and even chance encounters, chance events. I mean, even a tragedy sometimes brings out something in someone. You know, like, I didn't have a purpose, and then I got in a car accident, and, you know, lost my legs, and now I'm like, you know, feeling the zest for life. I mean, maybe not that severe, but a lot of times you lose someone, and you have this kind of profound shift in your life. So that would be something that, where it's not genetic and from early life, but some event happens and it kind of profoundly changes you.
Yeah, the message is this: never give up, because there's always an opportunity. If you're alive and you still have a chance to do something, to think, to move somehow, there's an opportunity to change. And that's the nature of life, right? Mm-hmm. It's always changing, adapting. And so our task is simply to cooperate with it, cooperate with that change and play into it instead of buying into whatever diagnosis or limitation we observe, or others tell us that, you know, you can't do that.
Like my father, he said, they said only 20%, and everyone around him was like sad and, you know, sorry. And I was like, nope, no, that's 20%. That's great. Like, look at that as a positive. And so really, like, shifting your attitude toward what happens versus whatever happens, just reacting to it from that default place, is to stretch your mind and say, where's the opportunity here? No matter what happens to you, there's always an opportunity.
That's right.
So great. This is really interesting. And so next week, we're going to talk about environment, nurture, nature a little more, and family culture, and how that really makes an impact on our personality. And it's going to be an interesting conversation.
And to see if we can blame our parents for this.
Yeah, let's see. So now we know we can't blame our parents in this episode. Let's try again. We're going to look at nature and nurture. Can your early life environment shape your life as an adult? Can we blame our parents? Find out next week, the case for and against. So take care. And don't forget to subscribe to us if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're listening to our podcast, subscribe to Apple, iTunes, Spotify, all the podcast services out there. Make sure you don't miss an episode. We drop them every week and have delicious topics like this one. And we'll continue the series next week. So have a wonderful, wonderful day, evening, whatever time of day it is.
And thanks for watching.
Have a wonderful life.
See you soon.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe to Creative Minds Soul Sessions. And join us next week as we explore another deep topic where you can consciously create your life with Creative Mind Soul Sessions. See you next time.